C1AP. Number 7B.
So in this connection, she finds the identity of the angel, the message, but she says that its feet are pillars of fire, foundation of truth and love. It brings the baptism of the Holy Ghost, whose flames of truth were prophetically described by John the Baptist as consuming error. So she introduces here the fact of the three levels. If you read it again afterwards, you can see that this angel, she said, prefigures divine signs. It prefigures. Then that's at the point of mind. Then at the point of spirit, she shows that this whole message can be split up through the prism of science and see in its whole reflection as a rainbow, as the seven spirits, so to say, or the seven candlesticks. Now at the point of soul, she says that this divine science is actually consuming air. But how does it do it? First, she shows the level of divine science, where she said, "And it has for you a light above the sun, for God is the light thereof." Now this is typically the category and the level of divine science where light only sees light, where you don't see anything else, but in thy light I see light. It cannot see error. Then she translates it to absolute Christian science and says, its feet, that on which divine science stands, is actually absolute Christian science and Christian science. It stands, its feet are pillars of fire. Now we already see that fire is something that burns up something. That's the purpose of a fire, that can burn up something. So it is a pillar of fire, foundations of truth and love. Now you have absolute Christian science, which is always defined through truth and love. And then she brings it right down to the level of Christian science as consuming error. And now you have the application of truth and love to the level of Christian science, to the level of the human, what John the Baptist was interested in. See, it's interesting that you would say it was John the Baptist that was interested in that kind of thing, namely as consuming error. Can you see those three levels of how she previewed, how she could foresee the message of her discovery, the book that contained divine science, but which would also contain within divine science absolute Christian science and Christian science, the message of it. We'll see that as we go on. We come to principle. The text in Revelation went on and said, "And he had in his hand a little book open." The little book open at once symbolizes science. The moment we have reading, learning, teaching, research, book, and so on, we touch the symbol of principle as the scientific sense of being. "And he set his right foot upon the sea and his left foot on the earth." So here we have again the presentation of all three levels of divine science, of absolute Christian science, and of Christian science. And she explains that in the text. So she first starts out with the little book and ask herself that it contained the revelation of divine science. That was the standpoint from which she goes out, that the book, that science and health, contains the divine science, which she said she reduced to a divine system as absolute Christian science and Christian science. She says this little book is open for all to read and understand. Its truth volume is the marginal heading. So she gives first the sense, here is a book of divine science, and everyone can understand it and can read it. Now, she says that this book is in the hand of an angel which had 2 feet. And what are those 2 feet? The right foot was up on the sea. Sea was always elementary latent error, because sea is something, nothing concrete. You cannot form water. It's something you cannot quite define. It's elementary latent error. But it is really the source of all error's visible forms. So actually latent error is much more dangerous and much more important to handle than concrete error. Because if we can handle the source of error, then we will not have the experience of concrete error, like sickness and sin and death, etc. So, therefore, she calls that right foot. Right is always the strength. The right hand was always spiritual power. The right foot was spiritual power. The right side is always the power sense. So that she calls it the dominant power. That is right foot up on the sea, where we should handle with, from the standpoint of absolute Christian science, we should handle latent error. That would be the best thing to do. It would be the preventive art of handling error, and would be that art of Christian science which is so necessary. Whereas the left foot symbolizes the level of Christian science, you see it at once. It was up on the earth that had more tangible sense. That is a secondary power. You see, it's a secondary power. The primary power, the dominant power, is really absolute Christian science with which we handle latent error, preventive healing, preventive art of healing. That is, a secondary power was exercised upon visible error and audible sin. Now, this is really the earth where we have visible error and audible sin. So she gives here a sense that Christian science shows the power over the physical, whereas in absolute Christian science with the right foot, she showed the power over the carnal mind as such, the general universal belief of a carnal mind, whereas the left foot was showing Christian science that would exercise power over the physical, the power over sin, sickness, and death, as she usually calls that triad. So here she prefigures again through that angel with the book and says, well, it prefigures that that book contains divine science, and it has the promise on its brow that it says that it's going to handle through absolute Christian science the dominant power, the latent error, and it's going to handle through the level of Christian science concrete error, or what she says, visible error and audible sin. Then she goes on in the text, and we come to life. And the moment we come to life, truth and love, she does no more interpret the text, the biblical text that she has at the beginning of this chapter. She interprets a biblical text that is in the Bible, but which she doesn't quote here, namely, from that point on where we touch life, on line 559-8, from there on we have life, truth, and love. I'm going to quote to you what the Bible says so that we understand why she gives this explanation, because if we would not know that, then we would say, well, what she says from here on in the textbook has no reference, really, to the biblical quotation she has given on page 558. So only when we see that she actually interprets further verses in the Bible or of the Bible, then we understand her interpretation. The Bible says here that angel cried with a loud voice as when a lion roareth. And when he had cried, seven thunders uttered their voices. This is where Mrs. Eddy starts in. You can see that she interprets that verse and says, the still small voice of scientific thought. It's terrific. You see, she doesn't say it's a still small voice of the scientific idea or of the divine idea or of the true idea or of the spiritual idea, as she would say in the next chapter. But not here. The whole explanation that she gives here on the 10th chapter of Revelation has all to do with thought, with the angel state of consciousness. But she lifts that thought to the point of scientific thought at this point, because she has shown that that angel has a scientific book in his hand, a textbook in his hand. So she began already to see that God's thoughts must be scientific, that they must be channelized into a scientific way of thinking. And therefore, she says, it's a scientific thought. And this, to me, seems to be the leading tone of this whole 10th chapter. And it is a still small voice. Whereas, can you see, the Bible was speaking about, and the angel cried with a loud voice, as a lion roareth. But she interprets it the other way around for the moment and says that scientific thought is first really a still, small voice. Then, and it reaches over continent and oceans to the globe's remotest bound. Can you see how she gives the tone of life, that scientific thought is ever present, is all presence. It reaches to the globe's remotest bounds. So she gives here the ever-present sense of life. Goes on and says, the inaudible voice of truth. Again, it's inaudible voice of truth. Not yet the lion roars. Is to the human mind as when the lion roars. Can you see? So often she will now show the categories. She will show, for instance, here that the same fact appears very differently according to the level or to the category in which we are thinking. Here, from the category of absolute Christian Science, it is a still, small voice. From the category of the human level, it is as a lion roars, very loud. So the same thing can be still or loud. And this is something which we have to learn more and more, namely that we must be able to read the textbook in a dimensional sense. And only if we read it in a dimensional sense, it really makes sense, or else we have always, all through our lives, the same question coming up. You know, we know that the Christian Scientist who has only a linear way of thinking, has only a one-dimensional level of thinking, he never gets answers to his questions. Never. That's what is so burdensome for us teachers, or for us who teach this thing, that we just see that if people don't get hold of the categories, that they come up year after year after year with the same dumb old questions. It just seems that if it is impossible to present the simplest thing, because they don't want to think dimensionally or in categories. So what the revelator saw at that in his revelation is terrific. He begins to introduce categories, 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 and shows only if you go out from the right category can you understand things. Because something appears as something on one level and as something very different on another level, but still it's the same thing. And that is the point that we want to bring out with the chart or with the dimensional sense of being. So the inaudible voice of truth is to the human mind as when a lion roareth. It is heard in the desert and in dark places of fear. You see, only on that level of fear can we hear the voice of truth as a lion roars. It really shakes us up. Whereas the one who is engaged in the level of science, he sits back and he wants to be alone. He's alone with his thoughts, and he has that wonderful, peaceful sense where he flows along the categories of science itself, the categories of divine science, the categories of absolute Christian science, and sees that this is, in a lovely way, the answer also on the level of the human. So for him, the same thing is a still small voice. For the one who does not understand it, he is under the trumpet of truth, and he just is shattered constantly by what happens round about him. It arouses the seven thunders of evil. Can you see, now she speaks about the level of Christian science, it arouses the seven thunders of evil. We are still in the trumpet, in the vision of the trumpets, where the trumpet sounded. This is still the sixth trumpet. And so it stirs their latent forces to utter the full diapason, you say diapason, of secret tones. Secret tones, because he cannot understand what's going on. He only hears the trumpet blowing, he only hears the lion roaring, and he's afraid, and he doesn't know what's going on, because there are secret tones. The Christ is then hidden away. The working of the Christ that says, I only want to help you, I only come to help you, I only come to save you. Can't you see what I have in store for you? That's the secrecy, the mystery of God. And then the Bible still goes on in that same vein of life. And when the seven thunders had uttered their voices, I heard a voice from heaven saying, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered, and write them not. Can you see why Mrs. Eddy has not interpreted those verses? Because it said, write them not, write them not. And the angels swear by him that liveth for ever and ever, that there should be time no longer. So what the revelator said, he said, don't write down the thunders. Don't write down evil. Don't spread out all over the world evil. Shut that up. What is the rendering? Write them not. Seal those things and write them not. Seal those things and don't talk about them. Don't speak about them. It's no use to constantly talk about evil, constantly talk about our problems. There are people that just can't help but talk about their problems. You see them years after years and they talk about the same problems. But the Revelator said, shut them up, seal them up, write them not. You cannot help anything by talking about the problem or by thinking about the problem or ruminate about the problem constantly. That constant ruminating and about the same thing doesn't help a thing. On the contrary, it only prevents really that the right idea will come out. So he is presenting really here the book of divine science that shows us that evil really should not be written down, should not really be uttered, not even thought. We have to have some kind of a discipline that if that nearly unconscious suggestion is constantly well up within our consciousness that always wants to tell us what is wrong about us and what problem I have and what problem should be solved and what is this and what is that, all the evil suggestions that constantly well up within ourselves. We know that. We sit down and say, now I will pray and we'll forget all about it. And after 20 seconds, something within us talks about the roaring lion, huh? And tells us about all our problems we have and how bad we are off and how what things should be. And it needs a discipline to have scientific thought about it. And sometimes it needs a great discipline, a discipline that goes over weeks and months, perhaps, but finally we can lift ourselves out of that whole thing. That then, instead of that, the still small voice is constantly as a background music telling the new song and sings the new song of song. Science, the song of song. This is the proposition that we have here. Then the text goes on to truth. Again, there is a text in it in Revelation which Mrs. Eddy has not quoted, where it says that the voice from heaven said, go and take the little book. And I went unto the angel and said, give me the little book. And he said unto me, take it and eat it up, and it shall make thy belly bitter, but it shall be in thy mouth sweet as honey. Now this is what Mrs. Eddy now interprets here without that quote. Then is the power of truth demonstrated, made manifest in the destruction of error. Then will the voice from harmony cry, go and take the little book, take it and eat it up, and it shall make thy belly bitter, but it shall be in thy mouth sweet as honey. And Mrs. Eddy says, mortals, obey the heavenly evangel. Are we obeying? She speaks about mortals. She addresses mortals. She doesn't address men, the idea of God. She addresses us, those who take the little book and read it. She says to us, obey the heavenly evangel. Take it, read it, eat it up. And goes on at the point of love and says, take divine science. So simple. Take divine science. Read this book from beginning to end. Read it from beginning to end. Did she obey that? She says that she didn't obey that until June 10th, 1907. But only until June 10th, 1907, she had never read this book throughout, consecutively, in order to elucidate her idealism. Well, why not? Because up to that time, that textbook did not elucidate her idealism. Only in the middle of 1907, the textbook elucidated her idealism. Because only at that time, just a few months before, she had made those changes in the textbook you know what happened? That in that year, 1907, she made two big changes in the textbook. She changed the order of the synonymous terms in the question, what is God, to that order which is fundamental to the order of the subject in each chapter. Each chapter runs through the subject runs through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And only in 1907 she changed the definition of God into the order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Before that time, they were not congruent. They did not support each other. So they were not consistent. And it was in 1907, in the early months of that year, that she changed, or that she added in recapitulation, that a statement, principle and idea is one. And only when she had done that she could see there is only one being, and that one being sitting on the throne was surrounded by seven spirits, and put the order of those seven spirits, the seven synonymous term, in the right order, then those statements were congruent, is that the right term, congruent with the structure of each chapter of the textbook. And so her idealism was only fulfilled in 1907. So only at that time she could make that statement. Don't you think it's interesting to find that she made such a statement? Why should she tell the whole world for the next few hundred years to come what happened on June the 10th, 1907, that she read the textbook through? Wouldn't you think that's not very interesting? Actually, it wouldn't be very interesting, huh? What she did at that time. Just as if she would have said, well, in June 1900, so-and-so, I ate ice cream. I had a wonderful ice cream and so on. Well, but here she was saying something that this was a turning point. Here she finally had climaxed her whole revelation and reduced it to a real system, to a consistent system of the seven synonymous term as the oneness of being. So at that time she did that. Therefore she said, take divine sign, read this book from beginning to end.